You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What a move from Stamkos. Selling the shot, you have to respect that. You try to block it, and then he dangles and brings it to the backhand right from the slot and hits a post.
Off the faceoff, it's time to score! Kale Yarncroke ties it up! Right off the faceoff. Point deals off left side, a shot tipped right on. Rene made the stop. And now down on the sidewall, a casualty of all of that, Sergachev now wants to have a piece of Ryan Johansson. Point is slow to get up on a knee now on the right wing board of the Tampa zone. Here's Kyle Raymond.
After reviewing the penalty, 92 Nashville, 5 minutes, the game is conduct for elbowing.
Wow.
20 seconds left of the power play. Pass got away from Smith down low. Turris slipped toward Bonino. Comes back to Turris on the left board. Zips his pass out for Ekholm. Now Ellis, Ekholm, and Turris scores! Kyle Turris ties it up!
At the blue line. Holding on to it now, Sergachev. Comes out to the line, keeps the puck in the zone. They have played 2 minutes and 22 seconds of the maximum five. Here's a shot toward the net by the Tampa Bay Lightning, stopped by Rene. Chernak got that shot. Now Stamkos puts it down and is deflected in. The Lightning win in overtime.
Well, it's a tough loss. You know, you battle back and you kill some penalties at the end. You get yourself in a position for overtime. So I think the loss is tough. You want to walk away with that second point. Thought we started okay. Didn't get the lead. We were a little bit sleepy in the second period. And I thought we played pretty good 5-on-5 in the third period and killed the penalties. Pecks made some big saves and we couldn't put it away. But I know there was a lot going on here, right?
Welcome in to this Wednesday edition of Morning Drive. Ryan Porth here in studio. Preds lose last night to the Tampa Bay Lightning 3-2 in overtime. We'll get to that game here shortly. They call in baseball the opener. The Tampa Bay Rays have been notorious for this over the last couple years. They bring in a reliever to start the game, and then they go to the starter, almost a strategic play, to try to get through a longer portion of the game with pitching, and that is what's going on right now. Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Corey Curtis and Derek Mason will have Morning Drive from Sudden Service out in Nolensville here shortly, experiencing some setup issues. So we will be going to them here in a little bit. But last night, the Nashville Predators 3-2 overtime loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it was as spirited of a game as you'll see between an Eastern Conference opponent and a Western Conference opponent at the start of December. And it really all started when the Tampa Bay Lightning were up 2-1. And Ryan Johansson is down in the corner of the defensive zone. And he kind of swings his elbow to fend off Braden Point. Well, there is a height difference, a distinct height difference between Ryan Johansson and Braden Point. And Johansson connects with Point's head with the elbow, and Johansson goes to the box. On the on-ice officials review the penalty, and they end up giving Ryan Johansson a five-minute major and a game misconduct. Now, that is really where I thought the Preds woke up in this game. That's because the crowd woke up in that game when they killed off that five-minute major. And I thought that was a really impressive performance by the penalty kill last night, not only in the second period, but in the third period as well, where game is tied 2-2 late in the third, and the penalty kill and Pecorine came through in the clutch with a big kill against a desperate, desperate Tampa Bay Lightning team that had lost three straight going into last night. Both teams, the Preds and the Lightning, on the outside of the playoff picture at the start of December, something that I don't think anyone would have predicted going into the season, considering that Tampa Bay won the President's Trophy last season. The Preds obviously won the Central Division, won the President's Trophy 2 years prior. But last night, Ryan Johansson called for the 5-minute major in game misconduct. Now, there have been a lot of different opinions on that penalty. Let's hear from Ryan Johansson himself, who was surprised that was a game misconduct. And then there was a play later in the game, in the third period, where Eric Chernock delivers a shoulder to the head of Daniel Carr. Now, Daniel Carr wasn't on the ice like Braden Point was after he received the elbow from Ryan Johansson. And Daniel Carr got right back up, and Chernock only got a 2-minute penalty, and the refs did not even review for a potential major penalty, which drew the ire of the entire arena, drew the ire of Peter Laviolette, Roman Josi. I've never seen someone ticked off by a herd of zebras ever before like Roman Josi was ticked off by those refs last night. He was constantly in their grill about different issues, certainly after Chernock got off scot-free with only a 2-minute penalty. But here's Ryan Johansson after the game saying he was surprised that he got a game misconduct, but Chernock did not.
Yeah, because, you know, my back was facing him. I was just positioning myself to play the puck, and pretty frustrating. I guess most frustrating because one of their players, you know, made a hit on one of our players that where he was in a vulnerable position, kind of a malicious play, and there was no review on that and stuff. And, you know, I feel like my play was a hockey play and just kind of unlucky. You know, I think, you know, you got to control your body. And, you know, I would have accepted an elbowing penalty just because the way the hockey play went. But to see the next play later in the game, it was a little frustrating to see that there was no review or no extra look or talk about, you know, maybe a more significant penalty. But, you know, it's the way it goes sometimes. It's a fast game.
That was Ryan Johansson last night after the game in the locker room discussing his 5-minute major in game misconduct for the elbow to Braden Point. Now, talked about how there is a height difference between Johansson and Braden Point. Johansson is 6'3", Braden Point is 5'10". Naturally, in the positions that they were in, Johansson is probably going to strike Point in the head area with his elbow. Now, I did think him getting a 2-minute minor for elbowing would have been a good call. I thought it was borderline game misconduct or 5-minute major. But I think this goes to when you compare the two plays between Ryan Johansson and then the hit delivered by Eric Chernock on Daniel Carr, I think this is a perfect example of how NHL officials react to a potential injury in the moment. Braden Point lays there on the ice. He's shaken up. There's blood coming from the nose. Obviously, it looks severe, so they review it for a 5-minute major. Daniel Carr was not on the ice on his knees with blood coming out of his nose or his mouth after Chernock delivered the shoulder to his head, and Chernock only gets a 2-minute minor. So if the roles were reversed and Carr was the one on all fours after receiving that hit to the head, and Point was the one who got straight back up, I honestly could have seen that those situations completely flip, where Johansson only gets a 2-minute minor, and then Chernock gets a 5-minute major and a game misconduct. So that is a big discussion going on right now from that game, and it'll be interesting to see if there's any further discipline today for Ryan Johansson. I would honestly be surprised if Ryan Johansson got more than a game or even a game, really. I really would. I thought game misconduct was the max of what he committed in terms of the act, where Chernock should, if Johansson gets a game misconduct, I thought Chernock, his act and the shoulder to Daniel Carr's head behind the Tampa Bay goal there in the third period, I thought that at least deserved a 5 in a game if Johansson's act received a 5 in a game. So Johansson, that was one storyline from last night's game. And obviously another, really for the last 2 weeks, has been Kyle Turris. Kyle Turris, a healthy scratch for 7 straight games, making $6 million. Obviously, we know he went through all the troubles last season, went through some injury woes, and last night gets in the game. He assists on Callie Yarncroke's goal there early in the second period that you heard in the opening montage. Won the faceoff. Yarncroke turns around, fires the puck towards Vasilevsky, and Yarncroke scores to tie it up at one. And then on the two-minute power play in which the Predators received for the Chernock hit, Kyle Turris comes through with a huge power play goal midway through the third period. And this was Kyle Turris after the game asking how he handled the whole experience leading up to last night.
Just stayed positive. I mean, I learned a lot from last year. I'm not going to second-guess myself anymore. I'm kind of done with that and confident in the player I am and how I know I can contribute. And, I'm just going to keep doing that, keep doing my thing.
That was Kyle Turris last night post-game. So Kyle Turris, I thought, stepped up. Kyle Turris, especially when Ryan Johansson left the game with a game misconduct, thought Kyle Turris really stepped up, played well, one goal, one assist. You would assume with that kind of performance, he'll be back in there Saturday night when they hit the ice again against the New Jersey Devils. And I thought the key thing for Kyle Turris last night was that he didn't just go back to the fourth line. He didn't skate between Colton Sissons and Austin Watson and be put in a square peg when he's a or be put in a round hole when he's a square peg. He was put on the second line, started the game with Callie Yarncroke and Daniel Carr, and then the lines were shuffled when Ryan Johansson was kicked out of the game for his elbow to the head of Brayden Point. But Kyle Turris coming through in the clutch last night. He also had an opportunity there late in the third period coming down the left wing where my dad and I, sitting in the stands, we were like, oh, could he truly be the hero and score the game-winning goal for this game after tying it up and really be the star of the night? But Kyle Turris playing a strong game, and Peter Laviolette last night would agree with that assessment.
I thought Kyle was really strong in the face-off circle. He was good, really working to create. His line was good, obviously generated, so that was great. Nice goal on the power play, so it was really good to generate offense like that. I thought he played a strong game.
That was Peter Laviolette last night after the game. Kyle Turris, strong game again. One goal, one assist. But the Preds do fall 3-2 in overtime. And the inconsistent ways of this season continued last night. Thought they've been playing better since the six-game losing streak that had everyone freaking out here in Middle Tennessee. They sweeped the home-and-home against the St. Louis Blues. Then they fall in overtime against Vegas on Thanksgiving Eve. They shut out Carolina Friday night. They get shut out by Florida Saturday night and now lose in overtime last night to the Tampa Bay Lightning. They are 3-1-2 in their last six games, obviously still working through some kinks as they try to get on track this regular season. And they have a few days off, and they're going to have a lot of games in hand as they start another key stretch of play, another heavy stretch of play with a lot of games in a short amount of time before Christmas. So they have a lot of work to do to climb up the standings in a very competitive Western Conference. When we come back, we'll update you on the college football playoff rankings that came out last night, and we will also weigh in on the Tennessee Titans coming up. They host, or they go to Oakland to take on the Raiders, their final trip to face the Raiders in the Bay Area. Marquise Munson behind the glass today. Again, Corey Curtis and Derek Mason will be live from Sudden Service in Nolensville here. Coming up shortly, Ryan Porth in the Wholesale Inc. studios powered by RumbleOn.com in the interim on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Morning Drive. On this Wednesday in a bitterly cold Nashville, Tennessee, Ryan Porth in studio. Almost in a stall pattern before Corey Curtis and Derek Mason are ready to go at Sudden Service for the start of our Season of Giving brought to you by Sudden Service out at 6029 Nolensville Pike in Nashville, having a little bit of a setup issue this morning. So hopefully here shortly we will be able to throw it out to them in Nolensville. And if you are on your way to work or getting ready to go to work and you want to contribute to our Season of Giving, this is something that we've started here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is our first December doing this, where all three of our shows have different initiatives. Morning drive with Braden Gall and Derek Mason asking for toys for our kids' charity to take back to individuals and kids that are subject to sexual abuse. And midday show with Darren Donick and Chase asking for winter clothing to then donate to the homeless in conjunction with Pat Sperduto, former Nashville Cats head coach. Something cool that they always do every winter, go out on Christmas morning and physically hand out winter clothing to the homeless around downtown Nashville. And Jared Stillman and Floyd Reese partnering with Pencil, with LP, and Pencil contributes free school supplies to Metro teachers and Metro students so that they can get the supplies they need without paying out of their own pocket. So if you have any toys you would like to donate, if you have any winter clothing laying around the house that you would like to contribute, if you have any school supplies, specifically dry erase markers or number two pencils that you would like to donate out there at 6029 Nolensville Pike today before 10 a.m., you can head out there. We've got a big yellow bin to donate all those items in, and you can also win a free cup of coffee if you donate. And you can register to win a Winter Classic Nashville Predators jersey that we will be handing out and announcing the winner of at the end of today's show. So lots going on at 6029 Nolensville Pike this morning at Sudden Service, and we will be connecting with Corey Curtis and Derek Mason here shortly. Last night, the Preds lose 3-2 in overtime. Nikita Kucherov with the overtime winner for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Preds fall to 3-1-2 in their last six games. They are back at it Saturday night against the New Jersey Devils. Cali Yarncroke scored in that game last night. We will hear from Cali Yarncroke later on this hour. But last night, Marquise Munson behind the glass. Last night, the college football playoff rankings come out. And we knew Alabama was going to slip after losing in the Iron Bowl. Sorry for the reminder there, Marquise.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Look.
Yeah, still good, recovered from it a little bit, but then last night kind of brought it back to reality that it's really over.
As the Rolling Stones once sang, you can't always get what you want. I mean, Alabama has had it pretty good.
Can't win them all, man.
For the last 5-6 years with the college football playoff. So Alabama will not be a part of it. Utah moving up to number 5 and Oklahoma moving up to number 6. Really the biggest development of last night's rankings. Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Clemson 3, and Georgia 4, the top 4 remaining the same, but Utah and Oklahoma moving up a spot. And I think there was a thought with the fact that Oklahoma went on the road and beat a respectable Oklahoma State team Saturday night versus Utah manhandling a Colorado team that isn't going to a bowl game Saturday night. There was a thought that maybe Oklahoma would jump Utah and move into the number 5 spot. So I was a little surprised there, Marquise, that Utah and Oklahoma moved up from 6-7 to 5-6 and Oklahoma didn't jump Utah. Were you surprised by that at all?
I'm not, and it depends, because sometimes these jumps, like you see sometimes when teams lose games, they drop completely off the face of the earth, and then there's some teams that, and Oklahoma's kind of been in that slot where they've been in that 9 slot for a while, and I didn't expect them to overjump Utah because Utah has stayed consistently. They were the number 6 team when, Alabama was 5 at one point or 4, so they've always been in that 4 or 5 slot anyway, so, and you have to, it kind of sucks for Utah's case because now you kind of beat yourself up if you're Oregon, because Oregon was in that spot too, and that could have guaranteed a Pac-12 champion to possibly make it to the college football playoffs. And now, Utah's going to have to win against Oregon in order for them to actually get a team in there. But I'm not shocked, because when you look at that Baylor win on the road for Oklahoma, you got another opportunity against Baylor, who's a top 10 team. And, it's going to come down to basically these three teams, Utah, Oklahoma, and Baylor, and also Georgia as well, if they can, be able to beat LSU. So that's what the four teams is going to come down to on Saturday. And that's the interesting part.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think where there's going to be real drama Saturday and then Sunday when the rankings do come out, the final college football playoff rankings come out, I think the real drama is going to be if Georgia beats LSU.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's funny about that is Georgia and LSU is the last game of the day. So everybody's going to play Utah, Oklahoma. Everybody's going to be already played their conference game. So now they just have to sit and watch, root for LSU, and then Oklahoma and Utah can possibly make it. But the way I look at this Georgia team, I think it's going to be either Utah or Oklahoma. I think that's going to be the Final Four when it comes down to it, because I just...
You don't see Georgia beating LSU?
Look, their offense has been mediocre at best. You know, Jake Fromm has made a decline this season that, you know, DeAndre Swift is still good. They don't have the same wide receivers. Their defense is really good. Now, I think their defense is up there with what Auburn's defense was. Maybe not the defensive line depth that Auburn has with two first rounders, but as a collective unit, this Georgia defense has been pretty good, and they're able to contain a lot of good offenses over the last couple weeks. And so I think they can be able to maintain Jake Fromm for a certain amount of time, or Joe Burrow, excuse me, but I don't think they'll be able to do it long term and throughout the whole game. Mm-hmm. Kind of similar to the Florida game, where Florida was able to contain Joe Burrow for maybe a half or so, but then that fourth quarter stint that LSU had late in that game is what got LSU in that game against Florida. So, and I think it's the same thing, and you just can't, I don't think Jake Fromm can keep up with LSU's offense, and that's been the major concern. You're losing a wide receiver in the first half of the game because of a suspension that he had in the Georgia Tech game. And, you know, we don't know the status of DeAndre Swift either, so that's going to be the biggest concern for Georgia, but I just don't see them being able to get past LSU. That's tough.
It's very tough. When you look at the eye test between the two teams this season and the entirety of the season, LSU has, in my opinion, been decisively better than Georgia. Now, they haven't played, so this is the first time that they will go toe-to-toe on the field of play. But Georgia has not looked like its dominant self from the last couple years. Like you said, Jake Fromm has maybe taken a step back this season, where Joe Burrow has obviously taken a huge step forward for the LSU Tigers. And if LSU wins, then I think the debate then becomes if Utah wins or the Big 12 winner. Let's say Baylor beats Oklahoma. Baylor now at 7 in the college football playoff. What if Baylor beats Oklahoma? I think then there will be a crowd out there saying that Baylor deserves to be in the playoff because their win against Oklahoma would be better than any win that Utah would have. I think there will be that crowd out there if Baylor were to beat Oklahoma. And if Oklahoma were to beat Baylor, I think there will be a lot of people, especially with the overall talent that that Oklahoma team has, the fact that they would have beaten Baylor twice this season, I think there would be a lot of people saying Oklahoma deserves to be in the playoff over Utah. So no matter what, there will be drama. I think the biggest point of drama that we could have in the college football playoff is if Georgia beats LSU, then what do you do? I mean, Georgia would be in. I don't think you can take LSU out at that point.
I think, to be honest with you, there's only one team that if they lose their conference game, they may be worried about looking on the outside looking in. And I still don't believe they'll be kicked out, and that's Clemson. If Clemson loses to Virginia, I still don't see them falling out of the top four. They may move to four. They may move down one slot. But I don't see them. They're the only team. I think Ohio State and LSU, no matter what happens in the conference championship games, I think both of those are in. I think they may drop a spot. Obviously, LSU may drop to four if they lose to Georgia. Georgia may jump up to three. And then I think if, you know, Ohio State loses, they may drop to three or four. And then, you know, however the chips may fall. I think those two teams in particular have a bye. Now, I know Dabo doesn't want to hear this because, you know, Dabo complains all the time. They want to kick us out anyway. They hope we lose and all this yada yada. But if they lose, they are the team that I think that could be the undefeated team to get kicked out. But I still don't see it. That's like a 98% chance that they get kicked out of the playoffs. I think those three teams in particular are the teams that even if they lose their conference championship games, they're still going to make it to the college football playoffs.
Yeah, I would say Ohio State and Clemson are almost surefire locks to win their conference championship games this
weekend. Virginia had a good game against Virginia Tech. That was a
Virginia Tech is no Clemson.
Yeah, they're definitely no Clemson.
Let's be honest.
They're definitely
about that.
No Clemson. But what I'm saying is when you look at Clemson's schedule and they've been dominant this year, and I think that's one thing we ignore is how good they've been this year and how dominant they've been this year, but they've been so quiet because they haven't really played any opponent that's really worthy. Now the first two games was supposed to be, Syracuse was supposed to be one of those teams that was supposed to be the competition level for Clemson, and then Texas A&M was supposed to be the same thing. And neither one of those teams panned out the way that we thought they would. And, you know, they haven't had the best schedule in the world, but I still think they're a dominant team. And I still think even if they lose, they deserve a spot in the playoffs. I think it's just going to come down to the Big 12, and it's going to come down to the Pac-12.
So Friday night, the Pac-12 championship from San Francisco, Utah takes on Oregon. You can hear that game on 94.9 Game 2 Friday night. And then Saturday, starting at 11 a.m., it is the Big 12 title game, Oklahoma and Baylor. You can hear that game on ESPN 102.5, the game. Coming up next, we will head out to Sudden Service in Nolensville, where Corey Curtis and Derek Mason are standing by to continue Morning Drive. I'm Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. This is ESPN 102.5, the game.
Callie, I know it didn't end the way you guys were hoping, but get the point in considering how this game went, having to rally back and, you know, some calls on the ice. Has to feel good to at least have the point.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, at least we got a point. But, you know, we want to win hockey games, so we're not that happy with the one point.
Do you feel like that the effort tonight was where it needed to be?
I think we can play better than we did for sure. It's tough to say, you know, right away after a game, but overall I just feel like we have to be better.
This definitely had a playoff feel tonight. I know it's the second meeting and last meeting between these two teams, but what were you able to learn about your squad playing against a good team like Tampa?
Yeah, they have a good team. I mean, we have a good team as well. And like I said, I didn't think we played good enough.
Cal Turris returns to the lineup tonight and makes an immediate impact. I know that has to feel good in this locker room to see him have that success.
Yeah, you know, he's coming in with a lot of speed and got a goal right away. So I'm, you know, happy for him, happy to get him back.
Good morning, Nashville. Corey Curtis, Derek Mason at Sudden Service in Nolensville this morning. Thanks to Ryan Porth and Marquise for holding down the fort until I could get Derek Mason to come out of his car and come inside. Mace, I know that every morning offers its own struggles and its own stresses, but thank you for getting out of the Range Rover.
You're welcome, man. It was hard because it was warm in there. I had my 50 playing early in the morning. I typically, you know, I play some nice, easy music on my way to work.
Elevator music?
Yeah, why are you playing Get Rich or Die Trying on the way to work every morning?
So when I parked, I'm like, man, I got to get myself going. So, you know, I put a little
in the club. Is that why
the
car was
moving up and down? Yeah. A little in the club, you know.
All right.
Get myself going.
Ryan Porth was talking about it earlier. The Predators go down 3-2 last night in overtime to the Tampa Bay Lightning. That was Kelly Yarncroke talking with Chase McAbabe with 102.5 the game after the game. The Preds get 1 point, a game with some real playoff feel to it, some real playoff-type passion to it. It was I don't even want to call it frisky. I mean, it was gritty. It was tough. You know, for early December hockey, that's about as physical as it gets.
Yeah, you every once in a while, you get games like that. Now, all your games are going to be hard, especially as you start to get into the season, middle to the latter part of the year. But every once in a while, you're going to get those games where it just feels like a playoff matchup. Maybe, you know, because of, you know, the time they were playing, the team they were playing.
I think
you
the team has a lot to do with it.
And then they were on the big lights, you know, the big screen yesterday. So that you know, when that typically happens, there's difference between playing a Sunday 12 o'clock game to playing a Sunday night game or a Monday night game. The feel is just a little bit different.
Thankfully, it wasn't a Saturday game.
Exactly.
Those have been horrible.
We would have counted it as another Saturday loss. But, no, they played hard. They played gritty. You know, Pekka gave up.
I thought he was pretty strong.
He had his moments, especially when they were in a power play.
That late penalty kill. The five-minute penalty kill.
I mean, he had some tremendous saves. But when you got to play at such a high level like that for such a long period of time, it does wear on you. And that last goal, that last goal that the Lightning got, I don't think they would have gotten that goal, say, in the second period. I just think Pekka probably was worn out.
The other story last night is Kyle Turris finally gets back in the lineup and scores a goal.
Yes.
And Peter Laviolette was complimentary of his game, thought he played well, thought he and his line created. And, you know, we have to wonder, do we see Kyle Turris again, or does he go back out on the island?
I don't know. It was good to see him out there. I think I jumped up in the air when I realized it was Kyle Turris. You know, guys like that, for whatever reason, because obviously we don't know what is going on in there, but you see a guy that was planned, and all of a sudden he's not planned, and you're trying to figure out. But then once he does something good, you're cheering for him. You're rooting for him. So it was good for Kyle Turris. It helps with his confidence. I think it helps with the confidence of the head coach. And you know, he went out there and did exactly what he was supposed to do, and that's to affect the game in a positive way.
Yeah, and I think more important than even scoring a goal is, like the coach talked about, you know, that's creating, playing with energy, and doing those positive things. You know, obviously, a goal is a product of that. I think also the body language on the goal is important, because he looked prepared to score. Uh-huh. He looked confident that he was going to score, and he was ready for that puck to come to him, and he absolutely hammered it.
Oh, he drilled that puck, man. It was, you know, that's one of those things where, as a player, you're waiting for your moment, but you don't want to get too anxious. It's like a touchdown. You know, you're running a fly pattern, and you see the ball as it's coming, and you're like, okay, I got to be ready. I got to catch this. And you catch it, and it's in an end zone, and you just feel a sigh of relief. And it's not like you're celebrating or anything, but it's just because you saw the look on his face after the goal.
Yeah.
He didn't really celebrate. He was just like, whew, finally.
Weight of the world,
you know,
off his
exactly.
Shoulders. Last night, also, the Vanderbilt Commodores beat Buffalo in college basketball. Got, I think, 16 points from Cleavon Brown, 22 points from Saben Lee. And Scottie Pippen Jr. continues to play well for them. He had 6 points and 5 assists. But, you know, he's on the court a lot as a true freshman running the show for that basketball team. Belmont sweeps the Battle of the Boulevard.
Yes.
Belmont getting the victory. Austin Peay went to Arkansas, only lost by 8 points.
Oh, wow.
So the Governors played well in that game. And there is Titans news. Tremaine Brock was picked off waivers from the Arizona Cardinals. And if you don't know what the difference between signing a free agent is and picking a guy off of waivers, when a team releases a player, he has to pass through the waiver wire. Mm-hmm. And that's what every team in the league can place a claim in on him. And you're ranked basically by your record.
By your record,
and
yeah.
So the worst teams have the first chance to get a guy off the waiver wire. So that puts the Titans, you know, towards the back of the pack now at 7-5, and they were able to claim him. And the fact that they put in that claim means they have to pick up his contract, which shows you that they wanted him probably a little bit more than they typically would want a free agent. And I think more disturbing about that is, why would they want a veteran cornerback that much in this situation? Well, you saw them play the last game without LaShawn Sims, who was in a boot, and you saw Dory Jackson leave the game with a knee injury. And Mace, it would lead you to believe that those two guys would be in doubt for this weekend at Oakland.
Yeah, and this is what we talked about some yesterday, is as the latter part of this season kind of winds down, they are going to be tested in a secondary because they play Houston twice with Hopkins, and then they play New Orleans with Thomas and Kamara's coming out the backfield, but Drew Brees, you know, the trigger man. So that secondary is going to be stressed. Last week they played a lot of bend, don't break, and that was against a hobbled Indianapolis receiving corps.
Yeah, this isn't a great receiving corps.
Exactly.
The next one either.
But what helps this is that Jacobs in the backfield, he opens up things for him. So,
and Waller, the tight end.
Yeah, this secondary will be tested from here on out. And, you know, if they can get those guys back in the next couple of weeks, then it will benefit the Titans. But if they can't, man, it's going to put a lot of stress on that front seven to get to the quarterback.
Well, the Tennessee Titans are now 7-5, winners of 3 in a row, 5 of 6. And I think the stat I saw is, since Ryan Tannehill took over as starting quarterback, second highest scoring team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Tannehill's part of that,
yeah.
But there are other parts to it. And we're going to kind of talk about the transition and some of the things that have happened over the last 6 games that have helped the offense and helped Ryan Tannehill get to where they are when we get on the other side of this break. It is the season for giving, and 102.5 The Game is in the spirit. Donations of toys, winter clothing, or school supplies will be accepted now at the 102.5 The Game studios at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike in Nashville. Donations will benefit our kids, the homeless, and the Pencil Foundation. The next location to donate at will be the Sudden Service convenience store located at 934 in Goodlettsville this Friday between 10 and 2 p.m. We are at 6029 Nolansville Road in Nolansville this morning at Sudden Service. Plus, we will have another chance for you to enter to win a Nashville Predators Winter Classic jersey. You can do that at the tent right outside the Sudden Service station here on Nolansville Road. For more information, visit the Nashville.com or the Nashville game app. 102.5 The Game, Season of Giving, brought to you by Sudden Service Convenience Stores. This is The Morning Drive on 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis and Derek Mason. Is that Michael McDonald?
Yes, it is.
I thought that was some of your elevator music. Marquise was popping up.
His voice is dope. He's like,
dope.
Hey, man, growing up in Detroit. Hey, listen, there were two guys that we listened to growing up in Detroit. Well,
yeah.
My parents. Was Michael McDonald and Hall & Oates, and you probably would never know that. Loved Hall & Oates.
Really?
Yes, growing up, my parents had to, because those were really the only two,
okay,
only two white guys, like, and they were so cool. They were so, because they had the mullets, and they had, but they had a soulful
giant
sound.
Mustache.
They had a soulful sound.
I never heard Hall & Oates described as a soulful sound.
They did. I loved Hall & Oates,
okay,
man.
There's a Jay Baruchel movie called She's Out of Your League. You ever see that?
Yeah, I did. I saw
the,
that. Yeah.
The two guys who have the Hall & Oates tribute band in Adult Education. It's fantastic. Fantastic. No, Hall & Oates are awesome. I mean, yeah.
One of them live here, don't they?
I don't know.
I thought one of them did live here.
You were.
I can't even ask Munson because he don't know.
You walk in the celebrity circles. You would know.
Nah, listen. I don't walk in those
circles. I mean,
you a
little bit more big time.
You walk more
in
those circles than I do.
I am not a celebrity. I am a guy.
I stay right in my little humble to bold like, over
I
there.
I couldn't get you out of your car today. So
it was cold,
cow.
Man.
Hey, we're talking about Ryan Tannehill. You know, still throwing over 70%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and leading the Titans to 5 wins in 6 games. And he, again, when we talk about this, people think, you know, oh, you just don't like Tannehill. That is not it at all. Tannehill
no.
is playing great,
mm-hmm.
but he's not the only reason. That the Titans are 5-1 in this 6-game stretch. People like to think, oh, well, they changed quarterbacks, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
They've done more than change quarterbacks.
You're right.
They have philosophically changed. And by philosophically changing, I mean they've gone back to what they were. And I said last week when I filled in here on Wednesday, this is right back to Mike Mularkey exotic smash mouth. They are running the football. They are going play action. They're even running 2- and 3-man pass routes. But the biggest thing is that there's, you know, their pass protection may still be struggling, but now when they run the football, there are no more negative plays, there are no more penalties, and they're staying on track. And, you know, Ryan Tannehill, as we talk about, you know, benefiting from the scenario he's been put in,
uh-huh.
Ryan Tannehill is a lot like a lot of guys. You know, he's a lot like Dak Prescott. He's a lot like... You know, throw out any, you know, other Matt Ryan. He's, you know, there are a lot of
Kirk Cousins.
There are a lot of quarterbacks in this league that can be very good with a solid run game and the ability to go play action. The amount of Aaron Rodgers that are out there
mm-hmm.
that can do it without it, you know, just there aren't that many. And you know, you can win a lot of games with a guy like that. And so, you know, it's not unusual. you know, it's he is performing at a really high level. I think most of the time he's trying not to do too much. I think this last week he did try to do too much,
mm-hmm.
and that led to him holding on to the football a few times and fumbling for the sixth time in six games, which is a problem,
mm-hmm.
and they've got to get a wrap on that. But, you know, he has been in a good spot because they're not trying to sling it 40 times a game.
No, they're not. What they've been able to do is, I think, what they intended on doing at the beginning of the season.
They didn't do it years ago.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
They fired the last staff mm-hmm. because they wanted to be pretty. They wanted
Titans are not built to be pretty.
No, I know, but they wanted to spread the field and throw it 30, 35 times a game, mm-hmm. and they got their quarterback killed,
uh-huh.
and now they're on to the next quarterback, and they're back to running the football. And the offense that wasn't good enough is now more than good enough.
You're absolutely right.
I am absolutely right. Here's, I like the sound of that.
Here's the deal. You know, the last staff wanted to do it a certain way because they knew this team was built. They drafted guys. They drafted Chance Womack. They drafted Derrick Henry. They drafted all these guys so they can be a running team.
Okay.
And then they tried to get away from it. They drafted Corey Davis. They bring in Jonnu Smith.
Well, they needed to add to the skill positions.
No, yeah, I understand that.
This is the problem people run into, uh-huh. Mace. It's like when the Seattle Seahawks paid Russell Wilson.
Uh-huh.
What's the first thing they did?
You got to throw the football.
They're going to throw it 40, 50 times yeah. a game. We're paying them all this money.
You're right. No, you're right.
And the Titans were looking at Mariota, and they're saying, well, we're going to have to pay him $20+ million a year.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have to throw it. I mean, because, you know, he gets paid, he's going to have to throw it. And so they started trying to, you know, we're going to scheme guys open, we're going to run free, blah, 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 blah. And they got the guy smoked. And now he's going to have to move on and reinvent his career, you know, somewhere else. But the fact is, in this league, you run the football, you win.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the Ravens are number one in my power rankings. They're really good at running the football.
Yeah.
The San Francisco 49ers are really good at running the football.
Mm-hmm.
When the Patriots are good,
they run the football.
They are really good at running the football. So we can glamorize the pass
mm-hmm.
all we want. We can complain about teams that run the football. Mm-hmm. But teams that run the football win, especially in this day and age when you've got these 6'3", 245-pound edge rushers
mm-hmm.
who are tough on tackles. You just ram it down their throats.
You run at them instead of trying to
That's
run
right.
away from them or you know, five-step drop, three-step drop, seven-step drop. I don't think too many people do seven-step drops anymore.
Oh, they happen, though.
Yeah, but they happen very frequently. But you see teams that try to become this sort of, you know, high-powered passing team, whether it's New Orleans, whether it's New England, Minnesota, these teams, Kansas City, these teams try to be these high power passing offenses. But when it comes down to it, if you can't run the football, especially in November and December,
yeah.
then you don't have the chances of you winning diminishes. Like you said, New England is good. Why? Because they can run the football.
Yeah.
They found ways to run the football come November and December. You know, the Baltimore Ravens, the years that they were good, and this year, why? Because they could run the football and then play action off that, then play really good defense. If you look at what the Titans, when they went to the playoffs, they were a good running football team.
The foundation of the team was Eddie George.
They played good defense and ran football. I've always said this. If you look at every team throughout the NFL history and look at the teams that are consistently good, Pittsburgh, New England, you throw a couple other teams that have been in the league a long time. If you look at their DNA, it's running the ball, playing really good defense. Now, Pittsburgh deviated a little bit from it, but
how many Super Bowls did they win?
None.
That's
when
right.
they did that.
That's right.
When they did that. But they found a way at the end, come November and December, they found a way to run the football.
Yeah. Well, they had Le'Veon Bell.
Exactly. Now they are they're trying to get back to that run the football thing again. Tennessee Titans, what they were built on, even in the Houston. Now, when they tried to go to this run and shoot, it didn't work. Yeah, they won a bunch of games, put up a bunch of numbers, but then in the end, they got beat by a Buffalo team that could run the football and play really good defense with Thurman Thomas. I mean, run the football with Thurman Thomas and play really good defense. When the Titans went to the Super Bowl, what was the theme? Really good defense, run the football, and then we would play action and throw the football every now and then.
Remember
even when we had really good teams, we found a way to run the football with Eddie Jordan.
When they started 10-0.
Yes.
It was on Chris Johnson.
Chris Johnson running
the
football.
Right. I mean, Kerry Collins might have thrown 12 passes a game that year. I mean, I don't know what Kerry's numbers were, but, I mean, you know, I hate to label guys game managers, but, I mean, that's –
They
know,
do what the offense asks them to do.
That's
it
right.
requires for them to do.
And that's what Tannehill's doing really well right now, and that's third and five, third and six, moving the chains. And I think, you know, I think one of the areas where he has helped push this offense forward is he has more zip on his fastball than Mariota does.
Oh, much more.
He's just got a stronger arm.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. And you saw a third down conversion to Anthony Firkser last week where he zipped it in there in tight coverage. And that's a play where I felt like Mariota could throw the same pass, and it might have been defended because it would have been just that beat slower getting there because he just wouldn't have had this quite the same velocity.
Well, Tannehill anticipates a lot better. What Tannehill does is what I've seen a lot of quarterbacks do, you know, in my years of playing, the good ones, is that, listen, there's a point on that field that we ask you to be at a certain time. When I hit my fifth step or my third step,
I'm going to let it fly.
I'm going to let it fly. And you, Neil O'Donnell was great at this. Neil would say, I'm throwing it in the spot. It's up to you.
He got sacked six times last week.
You're absolutely right.
He wasn't letting it fly every time.
He does have this, you know, a propensity to, I don't know why, but hold on to the ball a little bit longer.
He's trying to make
maybe,
a play.
Maybe it's because, you know, Vrabel said it. Listen, the receivers got to get open. And that's another thing. What I've seen with these receivers, and they need to get a lot better. We could talk about this a lot more on the other side. But in order for Tannehill, I think in order for these sacks to cut down, there's one thing that I believe the receivers need to do that they are not doing consistently.
All right. Well, Derek Mason is dressed in silver and black today in honor of the Titans' next opponent, the Oakland Raiders. It is a must-win game
for both
teams. We're going to dissect that on the other side. Folks, this week, Penalty Box Radio hits the streets. Join Justin Bradford and Glenn Blackwell this Wednesday as they broadcast live from the Cherokee Steakhouse located at 450 Cherokee Dock Road in Lebanon. That's from 8 to 9 o'clock. That would be tonight, this Wednesday. This is Corey Curtis filling in for Braden Gall on the Morning Drive with Derek Mason. This is ESPN's 102.5 The Game.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.